And with us, speaking of that, is Mark Ballard, who never stops, no matter what, pandemics, whatever is happening, he's there at the Capitol. He was there by himself for a few weeks, but Mark is here to provide his take on what's going on with the legislative session heading into the home stretch. What's your assessment of where this tort reform measure is going?
Well, yesterday they had a it was scheduled, the House version, which is nearly identical to the Senate version, was scheduled for a vote, but they pulled it off the calendar, presumably, or at least from talking to some of the reps around, was because they couldn't get to that 70 votes. So what we have now is Senate Bill 418, which was passed with a veto-proof majority in the Senate, is going to get assigned to civil law, which is a House committee that will meet on, maybe not Monday, but Tuesday or Wednesday. And then if it gets passed out of there, and there's every reason to believe that it will, it'll go to the floor. And then that it's going to take a supermajority to bring it up earlier than like Saturday or Sunday.
And are we potentially running out the clock here?
More than potentially. I mean, it looks like we may run out of time before this happens. Now, if they do get a vote, you know, before 6 p.m. on June 1st, which is less than a week, a little more than a week away, then 11 days away, I think is what it is. If we get a vote before then it goes to the governor's desk, and he will sign or veto. We think that he may veto. I mean, based on what he told you yesterday in the Ask the Governor, he's attempted to make some sort of concessions and negotiations on this, but the other side is unwilling to move on some of the major issues, such as what that the jury threshold. They want something around 30,000, but they're sticking to their guns and wanting 5,000 as the jury threshold. But it doesn't look like they might negotiate. But if he vetoes it, then we get into a real Byzantine complex rules on when he actually vetoes and when they could override the veto if it comes to that.
Well, and the governor, of course, was supported by trial lawyers during his campaign. If it were Governor Rasponi, this would be a slam dunk, I think.
I think so, too. I think so, too, because Rasponi was adamantly for this kind of version of tort reform, which what the commissioner didn't really say is that, you know, there is a 10% reduction, but it's not a shall reduce by 10%. It's really up to him to allow them to reduce by 10%. He says that it will save much more, and I guess we'll have to see that. And so, I mean, that's an issue that kind of comes up. Also, we don't really fund our court. Well, unlike other states that we're comparing to, we don't. The state does not fund the courts. And so the concern is by dropping the jury threshold too low that a lot of these jury trials are going to end up in district court because the city courts are forbidden from hearing jury trials. And so you're looking... They're saying a long wait time for your case to be heard.
877-217-5757. We'll cover some more ground with Mark Ballard. Much happening in our world at the Capitol and beyond, and Mark is on top of it all, as he always is, being the man who leads the Capitol Press Corps for the newspaper of record. We're back after this brief pause on Talk Louisiana. Good morning and welcome back to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard is with us to finish out the hour, as he is on most Thursdays. We always enjoy getting his perspective on our world, and the Capitol is heating up as we move into overdrive to get through the regular session, and it appears a special session is soon in the offing after that. Yesterday, the Louisiana Senate narrowly passed a measure that opponents said was a disguised attempt to kill lawsuits filed by seven coastal parishes against oil and gas companies. Mark, the governor is not a fan of this. That's another statement he made on the show yesterday. This was a 20-15 vote. It would seem that if he were likely to veto it, which it seems would be the case, that this one is not going anywhere.
I think so. I mean, we got to say that the supporters of this had a kind of Alfred E. Newman take of what? No, that they've said, oh, this is all about making sure that the money goes to coastal issues. But basically what happened was that there had been a bill that basically did away with the parish lawsuits, that the parishes own property in the marshlands, and they have sued the oil and gas industry saying that you need to fix up what you did when you came in to do production and drilling in the marshlands. And it's been very controversial over the years. But this particular bill would retroactively kill off all of those lawsuits. The sponsor of the bill, Bob Hingens from Abbeville, basically came up and said he didn't have the votes enough time to get it passed before the legislature adjourns on June 1st. And so they took another bill, 359, and kind of added language to that bill that would nullify the parish lawsuits. And that got passed by a bare majority. And it's going to be sent over to the House, where they're hoping perhaps that it gets enough momentum that when they bring it back to the Senate, that it'll have enough to get past the override.
Right. So, how do you see the special session evolving?
That should be fun to watch. I mean, for those of us who like the theater of all of this. Basically, what's going to have to happen, and they've been, without a doubt, slow-walking the budget, so we're not, I don't think they're even going to take it up in appropriations, or they're at least not going to vote on it until next week, and that would give it about 5 days to get through both houses before the 6 p.m. So you have a legislature that says, oh, well, we need to do the budget, so we need to come back for a special session. Now, when the special session is called determines when they can take up the vetoes that the governor is assumed to be making on some of these bucket list bills that the legislature has been pushing through. And if he vetoes before June 1st at 6 p.m., they can do an override right then and there before 6 p.m. on June 1st. If he vetoes during the special session, they can take up the those overrides during the special session. If he vetoes between the end of the regular session and the beginning of the special session, then they would have to wait until the override session, which they would have to call in mid-July when everybody will have been home. And usually what happens is that every year they talk about wanting to override vetoes, and every year they don't want to come back to Baton Rouge to do that, and so we don't have override sessions. So that is that's a generalized view of what's going to happen, and I'm sure that it's so complex that I'm sure I missed something on it. But so it'll be interesting to see, does the legislature, when they call back a special session, or does the governor call the special session first, give him enough time for vetoing in between? So right. That will be what's fun to watch.
Ray in Prairieville, you're on the air with Mark Ballard. Hi, Ray.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking the call. And good to hear Mr. Ballard on today. Mr. Ballard, today's Advocate had an excellent article by Walter Williams on minority black students' performance in public schools. And one of the things that I see, and he doesn't mention that as such, is that there are too many parents who don't encourage the kids to learn to read and write and count. And I wonder if there's any way that the Advocate could make an issue of encouraging parents, white, black, Hispanic, whatever, to work with your children preschool from 0 to 5 to learn how to read and count.
All right. Well, Mark, your thoughts about Ray's observations.
No, I mean, that's a good idea. I mean, it certainly is what we did in my family was the focus on reading and writing. And I mean, I think that's a good idea. There are some programs in the state that have done this, well, I guess we need to, you know, spend more time looking at them.
Well, yesterday, Cade Brumley, the superintendent of the Jefferson Parish School System, was named the state superintendent of education. Two intense rounds of voting. He's 39 years old. He got the eighth vote when it was cast by Sandy Holloway, the president of the Vesey Board, and the selection required at least 8 of 11 votes. This guy is a young man, and the person who was his most prominent, one of his most prominent challengers was 35 years old. So a new day, and it appears the governor is much more in concert with Brumley than he was with John White.
This is true. I mean, I remember that he ran, that he, the governor, ran in 2015 with the promise to fire John White, and it never could get enough votes on the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, which is kind of like the top school board setting policies statewide, never could get enough votes on Bessie to fire John White, and yet there was not enough votes on Bessie to, you know, continue his contract, so he worked on a month-to-month basis. Cade Brumley maybe is young, as was John White, and he may regret his efforts to try to become superintendent. Uh-huh. That is a lightning rod post, as John White spent 8 years basically batting off all sorts of attacks, even from governors.
Since we last spoke with you, Mark, on Friday of last week, we entered phase one of the so-called recovery and getting back to normal, if that will ever happen. But there are places open now that were not, and some are actually seeing foot traffic that is at 25% or above that. What's your take on whether the governor, yesterday it sounded like he was hopeful of getting to phase two in early June. Is that going to happen, or is it possible that he will once again not take any chances?
Well, I think that really depends on what the numbers show over the next week or so. And as he was very hopeful to get to phase one, almost a month ago, and decided at the last minute that the numbers just didn't show it, I think that that's what's going to be happening when we get down to June, and that'll be him looking at the numbers right before making the decision and then making the decision based on what he's seeing. We're still having a substantial number of COVID-19 positive tests. There's still a lot of people dying from it, but it's not going up as fast as it had been back in March and April.
Well, the U.S. now with almost 95,000 people dead from COVID-19, ranks overwhelmingly number one in the world in the number of deaths. 29% of those who have died are in the United States, a country with 4.3% of the world population. And Mark, yesterday the president said per capita the U.S. was doing as well as anybody with the possible exception of Germany. I don't know how he's getting those numbers.
Well, he's always been forever optimistic. This is this is a guy who's, basically his background is in spin, and this is one of his spins. And so, I mean, it's the numbers are the numbers, and the medical community are very concerned that this kind of reopening without the incumbent testing to go along with it, it could spark a spike in numbers again.
Yeah, it could. And Baton Rouge, a listener notes, I think in May has more cases than any other parish, and we are the largest parish in the state, by the way, East Baton Rouge Parish, but still, early on, it looked like New Orleans was going to be hit hard, and it was, but things have settled there, and that is hopeful for what may happen down the line.
Well, we need to remember that Baton Rouge has more in-and-out commuters than the other parishes, than New Orleans does. New Orleans has a lot of commuters, don't get me wrong, but we have more, and we go to more parts of the state. We lucked out in that New Orleans got it first, and so a lot of the stay-at-home orders, really, those directives, helped Baton Rouge not have initially have such a large number of cases.
2,485 deaths in Louisiana now, and 35,316 cases. Those are known positive cases, so that's getting close to 1% of the population. And it is going to be an uncertain process as we move along, but we will continue to cover it. And next Thursday, if things go according to plan, we'll hear again from the erudite Mark Ballard. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Happy Memorial Day. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay tuned.